You're listening to CLNS Media, powered by Boston Barber and Tattoo, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, located at 113 Salem Street. You're listening to CLNS Media, powered by Boston Barber and Tattoo, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
This is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.
Know what that music is, people? That music is the sound of a 104-96 victory by your Boston Celtics. First round of the playoffs, game three, to take a 3-0 advantage over the Indiana Pacers at the Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, Indiana. I am your host, Joe Choquette. I will be taking you along this bus ride for the next hour with me, my co-host, making his CLNS Media Production Celtics Post Game Live Podcast, #broadcast, Joel Pavone, along with, not to be second billed, a guy that's been with you 82 games this season, whether it was on the air or watching from his couch in the beautiful sunshine state of Florida. I bring you not one co-host, but two, the great Nick Cecento. Joel, Nick, welcome to the broadcast tonight. Your Celtics up 3-0 in this series. It's expected. The switch has been flicked. Joel, give me your thoughts right off the bat. Gut reaction, Celtics victory.
Well, I mean, you gotta look at the fact that Kyrie Irving, for a third straight game, has been picking apart the Pacers' defense and finding his teammates in the process. So tonight, not so great, you know, shooting-wise, but it was able to be effective. 10 assists, like, it doesn't get any better than that when the knock on him for a good part of the regular season has been, oh, he's not a leader or he's not that good of a leader. But I think he's been doing a pretty good job these first three games, and Celtics are up 3-0, so it's got to be a good thing.
It's absolutely an excellent thing. Before we toss to Nick, Joel, I'll tell you right off the bat, one thing I've noticed through three games of this series is that Indiana, with a depleted starting five, their best player injured, not in this series. I can tell you one thing definitively, Indiana does not have an answer for all aspects of Kyrie Irving's game. Now, he might kill you with points one night and be quiet with rebounds and assists. Another night, he might be assists in rebound forward, points back, which we kind of saw tonight, or otherwise, he can just be a phenomenal facilitator of the ball. One thing I can tell you, and Nick's going to jump on me for this, is I was dead set hard against Kyrie Irving's impact on this Celtics lineup for a good half of the season. And then I started turning a corner. If I remember specifically, it was a podcast broadcast that Nick and I did post-game. I think it was the devastating loss against Toronto. Nick was trying to talk me off the edge of the cliff. I was ready to say goodbye and forget all about Kyrie. Within 3 weeks after that, I was on the Kyrie train, and Nick was looking to get off at any station on that subway stop that it was making. So to see this entire maturation of Kyrie Irving's game as a Boston Celtic. So we saw this when he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers, but now as a Boston Celtics with a full season under his belt, entering the postseason, you're seeing his game mature so much so that he's understanding the limitations of it. So if it's a night where he's cold from the field and he has an opportunity to facilitate with the ball, he's doing that. That's what I'm looking for in my top seven player in the NBA, top three point guard in the NBA, in Kyrie Irving. Nick, I know this was, I threw you a softball right down the center of the plate, dude. Wind up, load up, unload, and hit that thing out of the park right now.
Well, I think there are two main takes about this series, and I'm just going to comment on what you just brought up, the Kyrie Irving. I've been off the Kyrie Irving train for quite a while. I didn't believe in the switch, although now I have to say that I am a believer. I have been baptized and bathed in the waters of Kyrie Irving's greatness because I believe in the switch, and I believe that Kyrie Irving has learned now and has shown in these three games how to play a role that's needed in each different game as opposed to playing the role that he wants to play at all times. He's learned how, like you just said, how to take over a game the way he did, you know, in game two, or how to, you know, facilitate and not necessarily have to fill up the buckets. 19 points, nothing to scoff at tonight, but his facilitation tonight, his defense has been incredible throughout this playoffs. Kyrie Irving has learned how to play a role and be a leader on this team. You can see him coming off the bench, excited, cheering, bumping chest, slapping hands, doing, you know, and Kyrie is a very mellow dude, but he's out there and he's doing what he, and saying what he needs to say to the media after the games that is giving Celtics fans all the hope, all the things that they wanted from the beginning of the season, and they're finally getting it now. Kyrie Irving told us this was going to happen. He said this is what he was going to do, and he's doing it, so all credit due to Kyrie. The other take that I wanted to say was, this series is done. I thought after game two, the Indiana Pacers gave the Boston Celtics a massive, they gave them a pretty good scare. That was a very competitive game. But when the Boston Celtics came back late in that game in the fourth quarter, especially with that pass to Jason Tatum for the three that gave them the lead, and then Jason Tatum, who, in my opinion, is an absolutely terrible passer in the open floor, finding Gordon Hayward for that shot underneath the basket, that open layup, and then winning that game the way they did, game two the way they did. I said that was the Indiana Pacers' best punch. They're not going to have a better punch. And even though the Boston Celtics tried to give this one away, getting complacent in the second quarter with only 18 points, they had a 41-point first quarter. And then they held the Indiana Pacers at 12 points in the third quarter and outscored them in the fourth. So, in my opinion, this series is over. I can't imagine not having a sweep. I can't imagine the Indiana Pacers not being disgruntled by and not being kind of, you know, discouraged by what they've seen here. I don't think the Indiana Pacers have anything better to show the Boston Celtics than what they did tonight. And that's basically what I think the takeaways from, you know, this game and the past the previous two games of this series. That's the way that I see it. I think the Celtics are going to walk the next game. Sad about the Bruins, though.
Hey man, you can't have it all, man. You can't have it all.
You can't.
Fans here in Boston are a little spoiled, but I mean, on a night where all three of the major teams were playing, I think a good amount were on the Bruins and the Celtics. So we got that, and the Celtics took care of business. But another point I wanted to bring up was about Jaylen Brown finally having a good one tonight. I mean, in game one, great job, you know, defending. Game two, he was in foul trouble early, never got any kind of offensive rhythm going. But tonight, he finally, not only did he break out early, but he did his thing. Like, in terms of finding his shot, he was aggressive. I felt like he was more confident than we've seen in the first overall three games. And it was 8 of 9 tonight for 23 points. Led all scores, Celtics wise. I mean, that's a good look for him and for Tatum. I think it was the first time that we've seen Tatum and Brown do well in the same game. How long can we can say that's been seen, especially this year? I mean, we saw it a lot in the playoffs last year, but this year I think it's huge that now that they're both back in the starting lineup together, and Kyrie, you can tell, was very confident in beating both of them.
Absolutely. I mean, Joel, I'll take that point, and I'll extend it a little bit further. Jaylen Brown had a phenomenal game. Not only did he lead all Celtics scorers, he led all scorers with 23 points tonight over 35 minutes. And it was phenomenal. He was a plus 13 overall on the night. And the best part is, I mean, if you look at his line overall, he was only one off. He was tied for second with rebounds as well, with 7. So what you got tonight from Jaylen Brown was an overall game. Not only was he tenacious on defense, but he was finding his shot, and it seemed effortless. And I'll point that out specifically when comparing the games of Brown and Tatum. One of the things I've criticized Tatum throughout the entire regular season, and Nick, you can attest to this, you've been listening in and a part of the podcast that we've done. I find Jason Tatum's game to be a little sloppy, Joel. When he's in the paint, I find him dribbling way too far outside the body and kind of exposing that ball as a liability in the paint, and he gets picked a lot.
I completely agree.
He also gets blocked a lot when he goes into the paint because he kind of telegraphs. It's like a long, slow progression to either the layup or the dunk, and it gives the defender the extra quarter of a second opportunity to identify the play and jump up and meet him at the apex of the jump.
Yeah.
One of the things I was encouraged to see in both Tatum and Brown's game tonight was the effortlessness of their games. It seemed smooth. It was a flowing game for both players. I didn't think either one of them, and I keep my eye on both of these guys. These are my wing boys. When I watch them come down that court, I'm watching to see exactly what are they doing. Are they doing the dirty work? Are they setting the screen? Are they popping off of it? Are they finding the opportunity to drag the defense across the court to free up a lane for somebody who's coming into the paint when they don't have the ball in their hands? And specifically when they do, are they using their footwork, their ball skills, to create that extra quarter of an inch of separation to give them that clean view, that clean shot, wherever it is, whether it's a 15-foot jump or whether it's behind the arc or whether they're straight up at the free throw line and it's a straight-on shot? They're seeming to find the touch and the shot selection tonight that kind of exudes Celtics winning basketball. So when I look at the – and the other takeaway point, if we drag Kyrie into this a little bit, Kyrie's ability – to show you that in tonight's game specifically, working with Tatum and Brown on the court with him, he was able to facilitate that. He had 19 points himself, so he created his own offense. He had 10 assists, so you know he was distributing the ball throughout because it wasn't necessarily a Kyrie 31-point night. He adjusted his game. So overall, those three players in particular are my kind of Celtic stars of the game for different aspects of their game. Were there any pieces of this game that you were watching from a Celtics perspective that were negative takeaways for you, Nick?
I think we've seen throughout the season where Celtics get a lead, where they come out hot. For example, in this game, 41 points in the first quarter. I mean, what was the score in the first game? What did they score, 84 points or something like that in the first game?
Yeah.
So it's like there's almost half of your production from the first game in one quarter alone. And then you see them almost getting complacent. That 18-point second quarter, you never want to see a sub, 20, especially for the Celtics team that's so good at hitting the threes, so good at finding those open shots. That's what Brad Stevens is a master at, is the ball movement, finding those, those good looks. And you never want to see a sub, 25, 24-point, minimum quarter out of these Celtics. And to go from 41 points where they couldn't miss a shot in that first quarter to then 18 points in that second quarter, I think that was as much – I don't think that was any fatal flaw of the team. I think that was just a typical of teams that feel comfortable. They think everything is going well. They said on the national broadcast, when you get that type of lead and everything is going so well on offense, it
you play
sometimes
relaxed.
Can lead to kind of lax, a lax defensive, posture. And I think that's kind of what
sloppy.
Happened. They got sloppy, exactly. But they corrected that problem. The defense tightened up extremely well in the third, allowing only 12 points. Those are game one numbers. They shut the Indiana Pacers down completely. Yeah, and so if you're going to have one negative takeaway, I mean, that's really the only negative takeaway. I think everybody, for the most part, played their role. I mean, you could expect maybe a couple more points from Aaron Baines or a couple more rebounds, but he played 21 minutes. You know his ankle has to be hurting. And the Boston Celtics won by 8 points, and they scored 104 points. I don't think there's too many negative takeaways because everybody played their role. And like Joel said, I think Jaylen Brown, he's had, you know, some better games than other games, but I think when Jaylen Brown is on, he's so dynamic that it's hard not to make the argument to have him in the starting lineup. But I know how great, you know, Marcus Smart is and what he contributes to this team. So it's a dilemma, but it's a good dilemma to have, especially when Jaylen Brown has nights like tonight. So there's not much I can complain about. I think everybody played the role.
I got
five
one
Celtics
thing.
In double figures.
I got one thing before we toss it to Joel. And Joel, I definitely trust me when I tell you that I am about to commence what Nick and I call in the business a complete tease. We're about to cut away to a sponsor for betonline.ag. But when we come back, the softball that I am throwing to you, Joel, is this.
Yeah.
And I want you to think about it. The best stat of the series so far and why. All right, Nick, cut it to break.
Today's episode is powered by betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/win and use the promo code CLNS50 to receive 50% cash back on your first deposit. That's betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/win and use the promo code CLNS50 to receive 50% cash back on your first deposit.
When it's time to make a hire for your small business, of course you want to find the best person for that job. Well, the odds are that person is on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to get matched with quality candidates who make the most sense for your role. People come to LinkedIn every day to learn and advance their careers, so LinkedIn understands what they're interested in and what they're looking for, which means when you use LinkedIn Jobs to hire someone, your matches are based on so much more than a resume. LinkedIn goes further. They include skills and background, interests, activities, and passions. This way, you'll get the most relevant and qualified candidate early on in the process, and you can spend more time on candidates you're excited about. Customers rate LinkedIn Jobs #1 in developing quality hires. So listen up. Post a job today at linkedin.com/garden and get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/garden. Terms and conditions apply.
This is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.
All right. Welcome back to CLNS Media Productions Celtics Post Game Live. I am your host, Joe Choquette. Tonight I am joined by CLNS Media's great Nick Cesenzo, as well as making his CLNS Media Productions Celtics Post Game Live debut, Joel Pavone. So, Joel, I teased before we went into break that I was going to give you the softball of the night, the stat of the series. And as a rookie, right off the bat, off a break, you get the gumball of the night. I'm going to give you the stats. I need your feedback on it. Right now, your Celtics stand 3-0 in this first round series against the Indiana Pacers. Yep. In three games, basically 2.5 games, Marcus Smart less. Your Boston Celtics have held the Indiana Pacers to 74, 91, and 96 points. Has this team lost a step in defense with Marcus Smart not on the floor in round one? Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to say no, because for the simple fact that in crunch time and all three of these games, and I want to say especially in game two, the Celtics have turned it up a notch in the backcourt especially. And I'm talking about Kyrie Irving, who is making steals, making blocks at key moments, and the Pacers don't know how to handle that, because I could imagine their eyes must have lit up when they heard that Smart was going to be out, at least for this first round of the series, and you know, they're taking it, and they're, we all, the word that was those tossed around before the series started when it came to the Pacers was length. How are the Celtics going to match their length? And Smart, we all know what he does, what he provides. He's a junkyard dog. It doesn't matter who's the guy he's offending or whoever he's getting put on, if they're taller than him or not. But so far, the backcourt, and I'm talking about Jaylen Brown, I'm talking about Kyrie Irving, even Terry Rozier, when he's come in and his spurts, have been playing great defense, and that's making up for the loss of Marcus Smart, in my opinion.
I like it. I absolutely like it. And I'm going to toss this to Nick as well, but I'm going to put a spin on it for you, Nick, because I like giving you spins. When I look at the overall totals for the three-game series so far, right, you have in your assists, in game one, Kyrie Irving led the team with 7 assists. In game two, Kyrie Irving led the team with 7 assists. In game three tonight, Kyrie Irving led the team with 10 assists. In all three games, Al Horford has led the team in rebounds, 11, 10, and tonight he had 8. The thing I want you to talk about, Nick, is the fact that this Celtics team, through three games, has presented 3 high point getters for each of the games. In game one, it was Marcus Morris who dropped 20 points, which was a nice return to form for anybody, including myself, who has buried the dude since the neck injury because his game has been off. His effort, unquestionable. His output, extremely under the microscope. Second game, Kyrie Irving drops 37 in a lights-out, vintage NBA playoff, superstar output-type game. Tonight, throw it to the wing. Jaylen Brown drops 23 against Indiana. It doesn't matter who they shift the defense to, in my eyes, Nick. What it really comes down to is, does the right guy get hot at the right time? And the Celtics are showing you why they're built the way they are with the depth that they have, given the fact that you can throw up 3 guys 3 different nights as your high point total getters. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that's the point of having this type of roster. I think that's the Brad Stevens roster, is the versatility of the players, that they can, you know, they're interchangeable parts that you can have them play. I mean, when Marcus Smart is in, even more so, because Marcus Smart can guard potentially all 5 positions on the court. But even in the absence of Marcus Smart, and I think Jaylen Brown has done a pretty solid job on the defensive end as a facsimile or a substitute for Marcus Smart. I think Jaylen Brown's defense is frequently underrated. But, I mean, yeah, it's just one of those situations where I think everybody, you mentioned Kyrie Irving has, you know, been the assist leader in each one of the games. Al Horford, the rebound leader, but you've had different scoring leaders. We spoke on one of the post-game shows prior to the postseason or prior to the playoffs, and we discussed the 8-man rotation and who is potentially going to get left out of the, you know, 8-man rotation, or who is going to be that 8th man, the guy that just came in and spot minutes. And you were right, kind of pushing the issue on who you thought it was going to be. And I gave you the answer that I said, well, you're probably going to have a, you know, Terry Rozier night, and you're going to have a Marcus Morris night. You're going to have one in any 7-game series, you're going to have one of those guys where they go off and have a big night. In the first game out, what happened? Marcus Morris had his Marcus Morris night. He's been a little bit more quiet and played kind of the typical role player role, even though I think he had something like 11 points and 7 rebounds tonight, which is fantastic to me. I'm glad if you can get that from Marcus Morris off the bench. That's excellent. But if you have a team that can switch on defense with everybody, that can, you know, take most of on offense, can take most, can all shoot, including the center, including Al Horford. I mean, Aaron Baines maybe not so much, but the rest of the team for the most part can shoot threes, or, you know, are respectable enough that you don't have Ben Simmons type defense or Rajon Rondo type, let me give you 10 feet, you know, and force you to drive on me type defense. Everybody can drain, you know, can stretch the floor. That's Brad, and then everybody can switch on defense. That's Brad Stevens basketball. And when you have guys that know how to play the role and understand, can grasp the feeling and the flow of the game the way Kyrie Irving did. Kyrie Irving wasn't the same, didn't play the same way in this game as he did in game two. He wasn't driving and attacking the basket on every single possession. He was facilitating more, towards the end of the game. He was facilitating more this game and letting Jaylen Brown or the other guys that had hot games do their thing. And I think that's what this team is made for. It's a shame that in the NBA the salary cap is such, and the way the league is structured is such, is that players like this, and that's what broke up the Oklahoma City Thunder several years ago, when you had, you know, almost at the same time, you could have had Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, and possibly even Jeff Green as like a four-man, you know, thing, and that, you know, four-man, you know, solid, you know, four guys. But then you have the guys that want their money, and they got to get paid, and then the teams get broken up. There's not enough money for, you know, the teams to keep them. But in this situation, it's showing, especially this year in the league with so many injuries towards the end of the season. The injury to which one is that? Nurkic over there in Portland, that terrible injury.
Yeah.
Another Gordon Hayward-type injury. You never want to see something like that. The injury to whatever that other big man that's on the Milwaukee Bucks, I think the one of the other guys they signed recently, he hurt himself. Pau Gasol at the end of the Toronto bench hurt himself. You know, several players going down. Marcus Smart hurt himself. But the Boston Celtics, as much as any other team, have that ability to fill in the gaps, and it's exactly what they've been doing. And on top of that, they're actually peaking at the right time. They're learning to play together and learn their roles at the right time, and that's what you're seeing from the Boston Celtics right now. They keep playing like this, and I know this is just the Indiana Pacers. They don't have Victor Oladipo. They don't have an all-star. They don't have a guy that can just turn it on and put the team on their back. I really like Miles Turner. He's really causing problems in the paint a lot of times when players drive, especially Jason Tatum with this slow load-up. But there's nobody that can really carry the offense for an entire game. Tyreek Evans can give you a spark, but there's nobody there. And I think that shows, that's one of the reasons why the absence of Marcus Smart isn't so detrimental in this series. But wait till the Milwaukee Bucks come around. I mean, different story.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a tough ride.
I'll tell you one thing, Nick. By the way, those are phenomenal points. But no, seriously, they are. I mean, Nick, one thing that's for sure, when Nick's talking NBA basketball, not only is he giving it to you from a Celtics perspective, folks, but he's giving it to you from a national perspective. He understands the NBA.
Don't tell people I'm from Florida again. I was raised in New Bedford. I live in Florida now, but I'm still New Bedford, Nick, so don't put me on the international, that national stuff.
No.
International maybe, because I do.
No. But, Nick, what I'll tell everybody is you have an NBA perspective. You don't just have a Boston Celtics perspective. And I really respect that about your knowledge of the game of basketball.
I'm forced to watch the Magic sometimes. I live in Tampa, so I'm forced to watch the Magic.
Having to watch the Magic on a regular basis. But I will do this. To put the ship back on course, and I love doing these teases, there is one – I don't know what they call it, like enlightening moment that I had during tonight's game. And I'm going to share that with everybody just as soon as we do the read for, you know, the sponsor that Nick and I have contributed to for 82 games of a regular season. And we do so after every Celtics post game. That's thanking Boston Barber and Tattoo. They're a long-term sponsor of CLNS Media Productions. They also are big fans of all things Boston in general, whether it's teams, whether it's stations, they're a part of the neighborhood. So I'm going to do a quick read on them, and then I'm going to come back, guys, and I'm going to talk about my one enlightening moment that I got during tonight's game. Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list Boston celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Milan Lucic, Brad Marchand, and I'm going to also throw out, I happen to think, Patrice Bergeron, because the dude post-game the other night had a fresh cut on his lettuce. I think he goes to Boston Barber and Tattoo because it looks that good. Aaron Baines goes to Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. It's more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's also a tourist attraction to the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area. We're located at 113 Salem Street in historic downtown Boston. Make sure you check it out, whether you want to get your lettuce chopped, whether you got some fresh ink you want to throw on a sleeve, neck tat, back tat, you name it. Boston Barber and Tattoo, they got you covered.
Face tats, forehead tats, teardrops on the eye, on the eyelid.
I'll take care of you, Nick. But okay, so now that we're back and I can talk about this, I had one takeaway, guys, and I'm going to throw it to you, Joel, as soon as I give this take. So I want to get your fresh take on it as well. I kind of already know where Nick lands on this, which is why I'm handing it to you. I want a different perspective. One of my enlightening moments tonight was Gordon Hayward's game. He played 32 minutes. He went 2-for-7 from the floor, 0-for-2 from behind the arc. He was a +4, 6 points. My enlightening moment tonight was that didn't fucking matter, to be completely honest with you. My enlightening moment tonight was that Gordon Hayward's role on this team is twofold. On nights in which he has a high point output and seems more involved in the game, it is so matchup driven. And I'll go a step further and say, when you're talking about the all-star top 15 player capabilities in the NBA, Gordon Hayward is closer to 15 than he is to 1. So if the defense decides that they're going to Bill Belichick Gordon Hayward and they're going to shut him out for that particular game, then what you're going to see is a low output from him. And you're going to see somebody like Jaylen Brown have a high output. And then there are going to be nights where they slack off Gordon Hayward and he has a phenomenal night. And you're going to see a lower point total to Jaylen Brown. As the season progressed, I was unfairly not understanding Gordon Hayward's role. I was expecting the all-pro Gordon Hayward, one half step behind Kyrie Irving in capability and output, showing up night in and night out, even though he was progressing from that gruesome injury. I expected more. But what I didn't understand was you didn't need more. You just needed what you were getting while he was getting to a level in which, and I honestly believe it won't be until about November, December next year where you would say that he's truly a half step behind Kyrie if Kyrie's still on the Boston Celtics. So at the end of the day, my question to you, when I throw it to you, and I'm sorry, I ramble sometimes. Nick does too. We all do. Gordon Hayward's role, have you always seen it as a complementary to the other wing, or have you seen it as a frustrating progression throughout the season?
Well, I mean, I want to say around up until about February, I literally was just like, you know what? It's a lost season for Hayward. I just said, he's just not ready. You know, they're going to have him come along, you know, slowly. At that point, I said he probably shouldn't have been a starter. At the beginning of the season, they probably should have had him come off the bench and work his way slowly into basketball shape and form. And then he had a great March. And he was comfortable in his role, I felt like, for the first time. And towards the end of the season, I was on the train of, you know what? Hayward is a playmaker that could be an X factor for the Celtics in the postseason because he comes off the bench and because he could potentially at any point go off for 20 points on any given night. And plus you had the other veterans, ironically enough, these are the max guys, Kyrie and Al Horford, that were playing so well towards the end of the season. I said, those are going to be your three guys. And anything you get from Jaylen Brown and from, like, Tatum are going to be, like, a bonus because you're not going to have to defend – you're going to have to depend on them as the team had to do last postseason. Now, the first three games of this series against the Pacers, tonight is the first night that more than two or three guys scored in double figures for the Celtics. And when the Celtics – have 4, 5, 6 guys in double figures. Well, Rozier had 9 tonight, so you can. I'll throw him in the mix.
And Rozier with 9.
Yeah. So when that's the case, when the Celtics are hitting shots and multiple guys are hitting shots and it looks like it's the ocean out there for 3, 4, 5, 6 guys, then a game like this for Hayward doesn't matter, like you said,
right,
Joe. It doesn't matter because everyone else chipped in. Now, when you have a game like you did in games 1 and 2 here in Boston, and ironically enough, Hayward was the only guy other than Tatum and Kyrie to score in double figures, and he was leading your bench essentially because Morris had a goose egg in game 2 after the 20 points in game 1. So Hayward picked up the slack in those 2 games off the bench, and that was his role in the 2 games here in Boston. Tonight, yeah, it was off, but he didn't get frustrated. You didn't see him put his head down, and it's contagious. You can see that, going back to Nick's point, this is what a Brad Stevens team is supposed to look like, and especially in the postseason when multiple guys are doing their things on both ends of the floor, and it's something very hard to beat, especially this type of talent, this type of roster, and that's why it was so frustrating throughout the regular season that this didn't look like a 49-win team. It shouldn't have been a 49-win team. Excuse me. It should have been 50 wins plus, close to 60 wins. But here we are. They're the 4th seed. They're about to sweep the Indiana Pacers. And it's going to be interesting come the next round.
I agree. I mean, aren't we all going to feel like complete a-holes if they go on and you know, let's say they get to the finals, right? I mean, and trust me, I am not looking that far ahead. I'm just using it as an analogy. Can you imagine if they get all the way to the NBA finals and they actually make a series of it, say it goes 6, 7 games, and we look back and go, do you remember when we were on podcasts and broadcasts post-game talking about how we were disappointed that it was a 48-game win season? You know, at the end of the day, it's all in anything, whether it's your life, your career, your sports team that you follow. It all comes down to reaching your goal. You know, so you go through a lot of mud, you go through a lot of deep crap just to get to your goal. But at the end of the day, if you make it to your goal, the journey becomes less important, doesn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, you're not going to think back to what the win total of the 2018-2019 Boston Celtics regular season was if they win the NBA championship or if they make it to game 6 of the NBA finals. It's funny to me because, trust me, Joel, I'll be the first person to admit to you that in this entire regular season, every Celtics loss, which sadly, I think I might have had either the number 1 or the number 2, Nick, you'd probably know better than I, ranking on total Celtics losses this season that I've done post game on. I have hammered the likes of Jaylen Brown, Kyrie Irving. Who else did I? Daniel Tice, Jason Tatum. I've crushed each and every one of those players, game in and game out, basing my analysis on the game that I just watched, not necessarily the progression through the series or the season, but just on that game itself. So I look back and I'm horrified. You know, because if the Celtics make it, say they get to game 7 of the 2nd round of the playoffs, yes, is it a letdown? Is it not making the ultimate goal? For sure it is. That's when the regular season becomes actually, believe it or not, more important, more relevant, because then that's when you look back and you go, all right, why did it end here? So, you know, it's one of those things when I look back at the broadcast that we've done, I'm horrified at what I'm going to think when the season's completely over, when it comes to a culmination.
You shouldn't be, though. You shouldn't be horrified because – I feel like because this team had so much expectation, something that Brad Stevens hasn't had in his tenure since he's been here in Boston, when there's no expectations, the Celtics succeed, right? Quote, unquote, succeed. It's a double-edged sword here. So now there's expectations and – everyone was disappointed, and it took longer than expected to kind of form this chemistry that we're kind of seeing now. But at the same time, say they do sweep the Pacers, what's the majority of the national narrative going to be? Well, that's what they were supposed to do. They weren't supposed to be in the 4th seed. They were supposed to beat a Victor Oladipo-less Pacers, and And so then it's going to be interesting, like you said, say they make it to the finals, say they win it all. Then what? What's going to be the narrative at that point because of the regular season that they had?
Right. No, I fully agree. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, ultimately, if I had a gun to my head and somebody said to me, how far can this team go as currently constituted? And that includes with current injuries known. How far can this team go? If I'm being an honest person and I take the green shaded glasses off for a minute, I take off my Green Teamer t-shirt, and my Celtics PJs, and I have to give you an honest to God answer. By the way, if that happened, I'd be butt naked. Now everybody can try to scrub that visual from your brains for the next 3 days. If I had to make a prediction, I would say as currently constituted, provided Marcus Smart isn't back during the second round, I see the second round going seven. And I think it's a coin flip, to be honest with you, regardless of a point of opponent. I just, whether it's, it doesn't matter who the second round opponent is to me. I just, if you had to make me guess, I would guess that it would go seven. They wouldn't get further. Now, that's with unknown injuries on the potential second round teams. Come back to me when you actually have matchup to matchup comparisons, and I'll give you a different answer. But if I'm going off of today, that's kind of where I fall. Nick, where do you fall when you look forward? You know, let's be honest. Let's look second round and then beyond, because this round you're up 3-0. It's as close to a lock as it is in baseball when a team goes up 3-0 in the playoffs. Let's look ahead, Nick. Tell me your thoughts. First thoughts.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't worry about looking back on the shows that you've done this season. This is only your first season, so you're going to, you know, if you go back and listen to the shows from this season, don't think about the stuff that you may have said, you know, throughout the season, because you're reacting. It's a post-game show, so you're reacting to what you see in the games. And, of course, you're using other games and other things that are happening in the season to inform your opinion about that particular game. You're projecting what you can take from that game and, you know, what that means for the future. But don't take it – listen – I've been helping with the post-game show either as a host or as, you know, a producer behind the glass pressing buttons and taking calls for several years now. And I spent the past 4 years talking shit about Marcus Smart and how I didn't like his shot selection and his turnovers and, you know, as great as he was on defense in the hustle plays, he just wasn't doing enough as that 3-and-D player. And then this year, I've been doing everything I can. Every time the name Marcus Smart is brought up, I've said nothing but positive things, because as much trash as I talked for the previous four seasons, I want people to remember more that I was on his side once he started doing the things that, you know, I was critical. Once he fixed
no Nick
the things.
And I, Joel, to know Nick and I is to know that I am the president of the Marcus Smart fan club. And it's an unofficial title. I gave it to myself. And Nick has finally come around, more so not because Nick's come around to the gameplay of Marcus Smart, but more so that Marcus Smart has matured. And I think his immaturity, Nick, is what you're stabbing at. That's been the frustrating progression for Marcus Smart's game. And it still, to this day, has a tendency to rear its ugly head at the worst possible moment. However, when it doesn't, the player that has been maturing, the shot that's been maturing, the defensive alertness and stealthness to be able to get the ball without getting the foul, that development in his game has outweighed the potential immaturity. However, we've seen Marcus Smart get ejected from a game this season. You know what I mean?
Joel Embiid deserved it. Joel Embiid deserved that.
No,
he deserved to get pushed.
But you know what I'm getting?
He deserved that.
I
you need that, Joe, hold on. Joe, you need that. You need Marcus Morris screaming in somebody's face sometimes. You need, you know, a guy like Aaron Baines to set a hard pick that maybe gives somebody a concussion or puts them in the concussion. I mean, not that that's ever happened, but, you know, you need somebody like Kendrick Perkins used to do, setting hard picks, playing hard basketball. In the case of Marcus Smart, maturity is part of it, absolutely, in terms of his shot selection, but my main criticisms were he's taking threes, contested threes, dribble pull-up threes, when he can't even hit them, when he's not good at hitting them, his shot selection is terrible and his percentage is terrible, especially for a wing. I think he was rated as one of the worst wings in the league. And then on top of that, his assist-to-turnover ratio was 2-1. You can't have, you know, one assist for every two – one turnover for every two assists. That's terrible as somebody who frequently is the secondary ball handler. But since he's corrected – those two things. I'm not going to sit there. I have nothing. I love Marcus Smart as a player and the heart and the soul that he brings to the team. So once he corrected those aspects of his game that I didn't like, and he became that true 3-and-D, but with that addition of, you know, super like unmatched, you know, unrivaled hustle that he's known for. And yes, he does still take the odd bad shot at the wrong time, but more often than that, he's making those critical hustle plays at the right time that can be momentum swingers and change the entire game. But you know what, Joe?
What's that?
I was going to wonder if you're going to say what's that. Just wanted to remind everybody that this is a live call-in show. We haven't shouted out the phone number yet for the betonline.ag toll-free call lines. So if you'd like to join the conversation, I see some people just listening on the call lines on the switchboard. But if you'd like to call in and join the conversation with Joe Chiquette, and the new addition to the CLNS media family, Joel Pavone. He was already grandfathered in because he's related to other CLNS media family, one of the greatest contributors CLNS media has ever had, Josue Pavone, Joel Pavone, the brother. Equally as good, in my opinion, fantastic tonight. But if you'd like to join us, betonline.ag, toll-free call line 347-215-7771, and remind all of our listeners that betonline.ag is more than just an online betting platform. They boast a focus on the player approach and have built their reputation on offering clients nothing but the best, from cutting-edge technology, enticing promotions, and the latest sports betting odds. Arguably their most popular and well-known service, their famous sports book, is where a lot of the magic happens. Here you will have live lines for all major sporting events, including the NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, soccer, Hialeah, rugby, tennis. What else can I mention? Women's college volleyball, one of my favorite sports to watch in the world. Love it. And so much more. Our live betting feature allows you to bet on your favorites quickly and easily and in real time. Client input is extremely important to BetOnline.ag, so feel free to offer your valuable suggestions to them to give them your best platform for all your sports betting, horse betting, poker, and casino gambling needs. And when you go to BetOnline.ag, make sure to put in the CLNS media code. You can go to clnsmedia.com/ what is it, CLNS50, and you get 50% off your first deposit to Bet Online. 50% cash back on your first deposit at betonline.ag. So a word from your sponsor, and it looks like we have some callers on the line. So Joel and Joe, I'm going to screen some calls and do my job and shut up. You guys can continue with the interesting conversation. We were talking about Marcus Smart, if you still want to talk about Marcus Smart, but I'm sure there's other things that we could also discuss about this game. But back to you guys.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. I'm always happy to talk about Marcus Smart. As anybody knows, I find Marcus Smart as an overall player persona to be very much in line with the, you know, you look to the other sports teams in town. If you look to the Boston Red Sox, he's kind of the Pudge Rodriguez. I don't know. He's the Trot Nixon. He's the Dustin Pedroia.
Yeah, that's a better analogy.
Yeah. Pudge wasn't that.
Yeah, Trot.
I meant Pudge Fisk. Trot. I said Pudge Rodriguez because I watched him with Texas. But regardless, he's more the Trot, Dustin Pedroia type player. If you look to the New England Patriots, he's your Julian Edelman. He's just your worker. It's your Rob Gronkowski. When you need that play, those are the two players you go to. When you look to the Bruins, it's Zdeno Chara. It's Brad Marchand. It could be David Krejci. It's not Tuukka right now. It's okay, but it's not him, and it's sadly, Bruins went down tonight, which was not good, and fall behind in their series. So staying with the positive, Boston and getting away from Marcus Smart. I just feel like the dude is. Yeah, I just feel like Marcus Smart is the quintessential dirt dog. For anybody just tuning in or listening, what's that?
The good thing about Smart this year, though, is that I think he's finally realized, wait, I am a leader on this team, and he's playing like it and acting like a leader for the first time in his career. So that's always an enlightening thing when you're
That's a fantastic point, because I think Kyrie Irving is like the statistical leader. He's maybe like the, you know, superstar. Like, you know, you can look at me as the championship ring holder leader. But I think Marcus Smart, and I almost said the biggest cliche in Boston sports, he's the heart and soul of this team. But he's the heart. He's the guy. He is the guy that when you need that, you know, that lift, that emotional boost, Marcus Smart is the guy that's going to give it to you. So if it's possible for a team to have two leaders, I think Kyrie is kind of like that. You know, even though he's still a young guy, I think he's 26 years old, that has a championship, that's won a championship. He spent, you know, half of his career playing with, you know, a top 10 player of all time. and he's that guy that you can look at. Maybe you play one-on-one with after practice to learn some of his moves, to get even just 1%, just even a fraction, just to, you know, bask in the glory of his handles, of his, you know, jelly when he goes up to the hoop. But Marcus Smart, I think, on the court, is the guy that's going to get everybody amped up. He's the guy that's going to grab the whole huddle and have everybody bring in and be like, listen, guys, we got to make a move right now. Let's get this thing done. If there's possible for a team to have two leaders in different ways, I think Marcus Smart and Kyrie Irving are those two guys. And I think Kyrie Irving and Marcus Smart would probably tell you the same thing, because I've heard them throughout the season complimenting each other and discussing how they've impacted each other's games. I don't think you'd see Kyrie Irving playing defense like this right now if you weren't playing with Marcus Smart in practice throughout the training camp and throughout the season.
It's the Kyrie Irving effect. I mean, you know, Smart is like, I can help you with your defense, and Kyrie's like, I can help you with your shot. And you've seen a couple of layups that Marcus Smart is like, whoa, that was a little Kyrie-esque when he switches hands or switches, you know, sides when he goes from left to right. And you're like, oh, wow, that's a little Kyrie in them. And especially considering Marcus Smart never
used to attack the basket to try to finish. He always used to kick out, and now he's actually finishing.
Exactly. So he's picking his spots, and that's good to see. The longest tenured Celtic, weirdly enough to say, and he's only been here 4 years, but he's realizing how important he is and how important his role is.
Absolutely. Actually, I think you just nailed it right on the head. I was going to jump in with you guys and say I'm going to pull this back from the weeds to 30,000 foot and look down at it and tell you that the biggest change that I've seen with Marcus Smart in his tenure with Boston is that this season, more so than any of the three previous, Marcus Smart is comfortable in his skin. He's comfortable in his role.
Yeah.
He's comfortable, to your point, Nick, is growing into a leader on this team. He's comfortable in the offense, where he falls in that offense. Does he occasionally fall in love with the three? Only if he hits the first one. But for the most part, and it's absolutely true. You know it. I know it. We've watched enough games. He'll take that first one. If he's nothing but bottom of the net, there's another one coming one or two possessions later. Garen friggin' teed.
Dribble pull up.
But I will. Oh, absolutely.
Shot clock. Yep,
oh
yep.
Yeah, he'll leave 19 on the clock and drop that from the top of the arc after slow walking it over half court. However, keeping that in mind, the biggest change in his game has been that comfortableness. Like, he's actually comfortable in his skin. And what we've seen in previous years was kind of being a tryhard. He was a tryhard. He was doing a little bit too much outside of his game. One thing that we can all point to, whether it's Marcus Smart, Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, all of these players, regardless of their talent level, have elevated their games because they become comfortable within their roles. If you look at Michael Jordan's early career, you know, output game per game versus mid-career, comfortable in his role, comfortable in his setup, his output those games versus the beginning of his career, you're learning your spot, you're learning your zone, what you're comfortable with. To you guys' point, he's developing his offense by playing against Kyrie Irving in practice every time they have an opportunity. That adds to his game. There are those type of advances in his career is the biggest takeaway I've had on this season, is that he looks so much more comfortable.
Well, that's why Danny Ainge is like falling in love with Marcus Smart. I don't know if you guys caught the passing of the torch special that was on NBC. Yeah, so when like I feel like everyone that interviewed their player, so you know back and forth, kind of is like, okay, this is who you kind of remind me of, and Danny Ainge talking to Marcus Smart and them having that conversation, like Danny Ainge told him, he was like, you're exactly the player that I was, and you're exactly the reason why you haven't been traded, and you're the reason why, and it's exactly why you got your money, and you're going to excel because you belong here in Boston. So,
yep.
You know, when
he is the same player, isn't he? Not that you think, he is the same player as Danny. He is Danny Ainge. So Danny Ainge is the guy that has no emotions that'll do it, trade his mother for Anthony Davis if the opportunity came along. And he has the one guy that he has a sentimental feeling for. And even that guy, he didn't pay him immediately in last offseason. He kind of waited around before he gave him the $13 million a year he needed. But that's Danny Ainge. But no, that's the perfect comparison. I don't know why I never occurred to me.
Marcus is a little beefier than Danny ever was.
Oh yeah.
He's the annoying defender, and he's the guy that opposing you know, when they go on the road, he gets booed all the time, and Marcus Smart loves it. On top of all that, he loves it.
Yep. He basks in the glory. I do resent though, Joe, you trying to pull me out of the weeds. You can't do that. I'm always in the weeds, so we can just stay there. They occasionally give off smoke, but you know.
Well, I will tell anybody that tuned in, like say in the last 25, 30 minutes, just to refresh, your Boston Celtics win again tonight, take a 3-0 series lead against the Indiana Pacers, 104-96 in Indy. Series is all but over. Get your brooms out. This one's going to be a sweeper. It's time to look forward. Toronto also won tonight. They go 2 up against Orlando. They win 98-93. And Portland is in a bit of a nail biter, losing to OKC right now, 110-103. So there's about 3 minutes left in that game. It's fun to be watching NBA playoff basketball right now. Are there any other series, Joel? I'll go to you. Any other series in the NBA you're watching tonight, or watching in general, or are you primarily just Celtics focused?
No, I watch NBA. I'm all about the NBA. I'll watch like in the regular season. I don't care if it's like. I mean, I was going to say the Kings, but the Kings were pretty good this year. So, I don't know. Give me like the Hawks and the Suns. I'm watching it because it's going to be no defense, high percentage shots, and it's going to probably be a quadruple overtime in the 140s. And I'm loving it. NBA. And I mean, for the playoffs so far, I'm watching all the series. This OKC series, though, not surprised that OKC is making a little run here because, you know, those first two games, again, I'm not shocked that OKC is down in this series. I feel like they were a little overrated going into the playoffs, especially, like, the seeding-wise. But, I mean, they weren't going to get swept. I don't think they're going to get swept, but I don't think they're going to beat Portland though. That's just my two cents on that particular series.
Well, I like it. So Nick, keeping with that theme, tomorrow the NBA features four playoff matchups. You have the 76ers at the Brooklyn Nets at 3:00. You have the Denver Nuggets at the San Antonio Spurs at 5:30. You have the Milwaukee Bucks at the Detroit Pistons at 8 p.m. and you have the Houston Rockets at the Utah Jazz at 10:30 p.m. Now, in my hypothetical world, Nick, because you know I love conspiracy theories and other things, you only have the opportunity to watch one game. Of those four matchups, which one draws the most interest to the great Nick Sesento?
For me?
Unless you know another Nick, I don't know.
I'm just still pissed off that the NBA left, two or three games in between game one and two, and then now the schedules overlap for the Bruins and the Celtics, and I can't watch them on separate nights. The Bruins are really the only other playoff series that I care about at this moment. If you were going to ask me about which one of those, what are the series again? I know Brooklyn and Philadelphia.
Yeah,
that's my answer.
Sixers and Nets, Nuggets and Spurs, Bucks and Pistons, Rockets and Jazz.
I hate James Harden. I hate his five, you know, his crab step, you know, step back. I hate that shit. It's just annoying to watch. The Nuggets don't really interest me. I'm going to go with the Sixers and the Nets because, you know, what's the series, 2-1 Sixers now?
It's 2-1 Sixers. Joel Embiid didn't play last game. He's questionable for this game. He shouldn't play this game. If he doesn't play, you know, the Nets should take advantage. And if they tie it up, you know, going back to Philly, that makes it interesting.
That's a bad look.
That's a real bad look. But I think this is the only series that's interesting in the first round here in the East.
Yeah.
I mean, out West, I mean, the San Antonio, it's an interesting story because everyone always buries Pop for the last couple of years. They've been burying Pop in here. It's like he is. And at least in my opinion, the best coach still in the NBA.
Yeah.
And Denver's pretty. They're still young. They're gonna be a better team than what they are now. I know they're a number two seed, but I mean that's an interesting story for the weekend. I think those are the only two that anyone should be looking forward to if you're an NBA fan watching these games tomorrow. The other two, Pistons and Milwaukee, that's a wrap. That was a wrap before the series started.
Oh, yeah. And now that Blake Griffin's done, I mean, that's a waste of time.
It's over.
Yeah, and the Jazz.
What's the Toronto series look like? Did Toronto pull that one back out? I haven't been paying attention.
Toronto won tonight, 98-93. They lead the series 2-1.
2-1. Yeah, okay. That's to be expected. No, you know, I hate James. I can't stand James Harden, so I'm not going to watch that. I just can't even – I watch the Rockets, and I just don't like it. I mean, I really like Clint Capella. I like some of the players that they have. I don't like Chris Paul either. So if I don't like Chris Paul and I don't like James Harden, why am I going to watch the Rockets? What's up?
Nick, we're about to be great friends. We're about to be great friends because I completely agree with you.
I'll find a way to get a hold of you. I'll shoot you my IG or my Twitter. I'm not as active on Twitter as I am on IG. I'm not part of the cool kids that hang out on Weird Celtics Twitter or whatever it's called. I do the kind of, you know, the Instagram, you know, just drive-by trolling and shitposting occasionally, but that's about it. But I'll get a hold of you, Joel, and we can talk it out because if you hate James Harden and I hate James Harden, we can have a bromance. I appreciate that. I want to watch the Nuggets because I want to see what, you know, what they're all about, because they're surprising me this year. I've kind of been negligent in the attention I've paid to the Nuggets. I kind of didn't like, you know, and I know IT is, you know, he's not part of the future there. He's just whatever. I feel bad, so bad that IT's, you know, career has kind of gone in this direction that it almost turned me off a little bit to the Nuggets. But I want to see what they're about because they're clearly a very talented young team. I don't think this year is going to be their year. I think they're going to run into a buzzsaw one way or the other, whether it's Houston or Golden State at some point. But I would watch the Nuggets game just to see the Nuggets. Greg Popovich is still the best coach in the league. I mean, he's bringing this team that shouldn't be, you know, in the West, that, you know, really had, you know, to struggle to get in there. I just don't like Spurs basketball. It's just, to me, is kind of dry sometimes, and I don't, you know, maybe it's changed now. Maybe, what is it, DeMar DeRozan has made it a little bit different. I don't really think so. The few games that I've watched when they played the Celtics and then the couple other games that I may have caught the Spurs playing don't really interest me. I just want to see the Philadelphia 76ers lose. So that's the one game that I'm going to watch this weekend. I'm going to watch the Brooklyn Nets, and for probably the first time in my life, I may cheer for a New York team. Even a Brooklyn team makes it even worse. But long as it's not a Bronx team, we are right. I'll cheer for I'll close my eyes and I'll imagine they're those gray jerseys with the little diamonds on the side, and just pretend they're the New Jersey Nets. New Jersey is just as bad as New York, but it makes it feel a little bit better.
Worse.
And I'll pull for the Nets. That's all I want to see. I just want to see Ben Simmons humiliated as possible. Embiid isn't in the game. I'm not going to, you know, step on somebody while they're hurt. But, you know, I like to see Joel Embiid humbled as well. I like to see them out of the first round. That would make nothing would make me happier other than Celtics winning than to see the Philadelphia 76ers get booted out of the playoffs in the first round. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they'll get this shit together. But the Nets have a perfect opportunity, and they can play. They can play. They have some nice players too.
Well, did you hear what the I don't know if it was the Nets per se, but Nets fans did out there in Brooklyn that didn't really have an effect. It had actually an opposite effect. They had these, like, you know, those missing posters that you'll see from time to time on, like, you know, telephone poles or whatever. So they had a missing shot and a picture of Simmons, and it said reward $24 million for. Ooh. If anybody can find Simmons' shot. And what happened, the result from that, a triple-double in game three without Joel Embiid. So, you know, maybe they gotta go back to the drawing board on that and try to
minus Joel Embiid, he had to. Minus Joel Embiid, he had to. What were they going to do if Ben Simmons didn't take over that game? You can't let the Nets go up 2-1 on you. That would be disastrous going, but, you know, with another game in Brooklyn. You couldn't do that, you know, especially with Embiid, you know, injured. They had no choice. But, yeah, I feel you. I hope they do it again. I hope they keep doing it. I hope they hold up those what was that meme they made after Ben Simmons had 0 points against the against the Celtics last season in the playoffs, and they took that picture of Wilt Chamberlain with his 100 holding up the little picture.
Yeah, yeah.
they had the, what was it, 1 point or was it zero? I forgot. It was something
I
terrible.
I think it was zero. No, I think it was one.
Zero.
One.
Yeah, that's what I thought so too. And they had Ben Simmons holding up the zero. I want to see that again. I want to see that every night. But I can't stand Ben Simmons either. I don't hate anybody. I just can't stand Ben Simmons' game. I think he doesn't show it on the court. He's not really one of those, like, audacious players. But I think I watched something of him coming out in the draft when he was, like, at LSU, and he's like, I don't even really feel like I'm in college. Why should I even go to class? I'm just going straight to the NBA. And he just seemed like a real prima donna to me. And ever since then, I was like, ah. And then he won Rookie of the Year, and I know that's legit. David Robinson did it too, but come on now. I'm hoping Donovan Mitchell wins it this year. What game are you guys interested in? Joe Chiquette, you didn't tell us what you've been sitting there, been the back. I know what you're doing there with your mic on mute.
I was just drinking water.
Bringing us back into the weeds. He's bringing us back into the weeds.
No.
What's the game
you're
going to watch this weekend?
So I'm obviously, I mean, I have a fascination with the Philadelphia 76ers, not from an appreciation perspective, but from a waiting for the nuclear bomb to detonate on that team and then for them to implode. What I think when I look at the Philadelphia 76ers and the Brooklyn Nets, when I break those teams down from a very generic perspective and I kind of assign them a title, I assign the 76ers as the team with talent but can't figure out how to play together, which was very reminiscent of the Celtics month one of this season. It just seems like ever since Jimmy Butler's been inserted, they just don't seem to continuously, consistently click on all cylinders and become one. They tend to play a lot of hero ball. And when I look at the Brooklyn Nets, I look at a team that reminds me of a Celtics team minus a Kyrie Irving, a scrappy team that, you know, last year's Celtics, less talented, but last year's Celtics, where there's a never quit attitude. There's a fight until the final buzzer and you know that the game's over. That type of mentality is what I take from the Brooklyn Nets. So when I look at both of them going up against each other, I find it more of a fascinating series to watch regardless of outcome. More so from I like watching these two teams go at it. I don't find a lot of enjoyment in the other games that are available tomorrow, to be completely honest with you. I'm more interested in that game if I were to pick out of the four. And then, you know, if you look down the road, I want to see the Golden State game on Sunday. It should be noted, just for the listeners out there, your Boston Celtics play again Sunday, this coming Sunday, Easter Sunday, in Indiana, 1 p.m. It's on ABC. Make sure you check it out. It's going to be a phenomenal game. Celtics could sweep and get Easter baskets and chocolate on the flight home. And be able to rest up, which is most important when we're talking about Marcus Smart. The more rest we can give this guy, the better he can heal up. Specifically, the guys that are actually playing on the floor. There's bumps and bruises between rounds that you just, you know, Al was bleeding last game profusely from the forearm. You want to give everybody an opportunity to heal up before they go to the second round. So make sure you check out the game on Sunday. Another reminder, tonight's game, your Boston Celtics win 104-96 in Indiana, take a 3-0 series lead. Guys, final thoughts on tonight's show. Joel Pavone, I want to welcome you to the CLNS Media Celtics Post Game Live family. You did a phenomenal job tonight. I thought you really brought A, great insight, B, good knowledge, C, great camaraderie with Nick and I on the mic tonight. I thought it flowed really, really well. Nick, final thoughts from you tonight?
He hates James Harden, so that's all good with everybody.
Yeah, that
anybody
helps.
That hates James Harden.
So, Nick, your final thoughts tonight?
Well, you just talked up Joel. Go to Joel, man. What you doing? That's
all right,
radio.
So, Joel, your final thoughts tonight. I was giving him time to stew and put his notes together, but, hey, you're on the hot seat, dude.
Well, my final thoughts is as these three games have progressed, we are slowly but surely seeing the Celtics develop into the team that everyone thought they were at the beginning of the season. And this game here was a perfect example of team basketball when your star's not hitting his shots, still finding a way to make an impact on the game, and then other guys stepping up in the process. So game four should be nothing more than what we saw tonight and probably a little and then some. Maybe we get Scary Terry back. I don't know. Maybe Marcus Morris has a better shooting night. Who knows? But I know that the Celtics are going to sweep the Pacers on Sunday and get the rest that they need before they run into the Milwaukee Bucks. That's what I got.
I like it. I like it. I like it. Nick, you're on now. What do you got, bud?
Yeah, I'm just going to restate what I said at the beginning of the show. The Indiana Pacers have shown the Boston Celtics everything they got. They've given them their best shot already. The Boston Celtics have taken it. Their best shot was that game in game two. They had an opportunity tonight in that second quarter, and they came out flat after the half. They've given the Boston Celtics everything they can give. The Boston Celtics, in terms of playoff rankings amongst playoff teams, they are number one in opponents' points allowed or opponents' points per game at 82.5. They're allowing 82.5 points per game in these three games against the Indiana Pacers. Although the Indiana Pacers are second, allowing 91.5 points, and only allowing 91.5. But the Celtics, they're going to close this out. It would surprise me. I don't think there's the will. I think you have, game two was their real big punch. They really tried to do it. It didn't work. I think game three was an opportunity where you have, the home crowd to really come in and give their all. But I don't think anybody is going to be motivated up there in Indiana on game four with the Pacers coming in. And like I said, I think you're seeing the team, like Joel, just referenced, the team that we all thought they were, like, to quote, what was his name, the coach Arizona, and they are who we thought they were, but in a good way, not a bad way.
Denny Green.
They are who we thought they were. Yeah, that's it, Denny Green. They are who we thought they were, and the Boston Celtics are who we thought they were. As long as they keep playing the way that they're playing, they're built for this. And this is the reason for all that depth and all those problems the Celtics had throughout the season, where we were complaining about Brad Stevens' rotations and Brad Stevens having to deal with who wants to get on the floor and doing all that stuff, and how that was really first world problems, because now you have a guy that's critical to the team, Marcus Smart is out, and you have somebody that's right there willing to step in as Jaylen Brown. And if Jaylen Brown weren't there, Terry Rozier would be able to step in. He hasn't had a fantastic series. He's done what he's needed to do in his limited minutes off the bench. But everybody's playing their role, and Kyrie has learned that there are other players on this team that can get a hot hand and they can carry the Celtics offensively if need be. For example, tonight, Jaylen Brown. I know that Kyrie was the man in game two, but Jason Tatum had a pretty fantastic game in game two. And to quote Shaquille O'Neal, he, and I believe this was in reference to Kyrie Irving in his relationship with these young players on this team. Shaquille O'Neal said one of the best things he ever learned to do as he got a little bit older was to let the young bucks do their thing. It made his job that much easier. And I know Kyrie's not old like Shaq was old when he, you know, had to lean on Dwayne Wade for that last championship he got. But Kyrie Irving's game and the Celtics will be so much better and have been so much better as they all learn their role and learn to ride the hot hand as opposed to trying to force it to Kyrie. When they need Kyrie, he's there, and he's proved that already. He's been Kyrie, you know, playoff Kyrie. We saw that, I think, in game two. But the Celtics learning how to play their role, that, and you're seeing it now, like Joel said and like Danny Green said, they are who we thought they were, and that's all the Celtics can ask for.
I like that. I like that. My final thoughts on tonight's game, I thought it was a good output by the Boston Celtics on both sides of the ball. I thought that, you know, to Nick's point, their defense has been phenomenal, but they're going up against a team that's phenomenal in defense too. But what the Celtics are able to do or are learning to do as the series is progressing is they're learning to adapt to the defense. So if the defense is closing in and the teeth are really in the paint, then they're settling for the outside shot. And tonight, your Boston Celtics end up on the winning end of this battle by being able to close out more of those shots with a 104-96 victory over the Indiana Pacers. Other takeaways, just make sure you tune in on Easter Sunday. You'll have your ham with you. Probably a nice little dinner, maybe a family gathering. You'll be able to watch the TV, see a nationally broadcast Celtics post game, a Celtics playoff game, and probably see them sweep out this series. I think what you're going to see on Sunday is a shell of the team you saw tonight. I think first quarter will tell a lot. If the Celtics can jump out to a 6 to 8 point lead and then extend that through the second quarter leading into half, I think this game is pretty much done at that point. So hopefully you'll see the likes of Semi Ojeleye, Brad Wanamaker, and Robert Williams enter the game if that's in the opportunities. But moving on down the road, I think the Celtics will be carried as far as the opportunities present themselves to do it. So to Nick's point, if they don't continue to play good basketball, good, strong, selflessness, when they have the ball and when they're off the ball, then they'll be limited. Otherwise, they'll continue to progress. And to Nick's point, they are who we thought they were. You know, you're looking at this team and you're thinking to yourself, do they have the capability to get to the NBA Finals? Absolutely. They have the capability. They have the ability. The opportunity will be a different story. So we'll see going down the road. I don't know if there's another CLNS Media Celtics post game live broadcast podcast in me. I'm officially stepping away at the end of this run. So if Bobby Manning so feels to put me back on the air, I'll be on there again. But before I leave, I'm not just leaving. I'm making my voice heard, but in primarily the non-sports world, I'm also on Blog Talk Radio. So check out the Brain Droppings podcast. You can search for it on Blog Talk, or you can find it on Spotify, iTunes, or any Alexa-enabled Amazon device. Listen, for Nick Sesento, Joel Pavone in his debut on CLNS Media's Celtics Postgame Live Broadcast Podcast, I am your host, Joe Choquette. Thanks for listening.